Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. You're listening to the Millennial Money Podcast with me, Shauna Compton Game. Today's episode, The Truth About Sneaky Bank and Credit Card Fees with Paul Kesarani and how these sneaky fees might be impacting your financial freedom.
You're listening to Millennial Money with award-winning money expert and serial entrepreneur, Shauna Compton Game, where we flip the script on the old school approach to everything your parents never taught you about money. Each week, Shauna creates a safe space by talking with special guests from around the world about money wellness, entrepreneurship, traveling like a boss, and what makes millennials tick. Unique stories, trailblazing perspectives, tips, tricks, and everything there is to know about money. Find it all here as you uncover your money story and unlock the life you want to live. Pretty cool, right? Here's Shauna, money expert, Indiana Hoosier, and burger aficionado.
Yeah, so unfortunately, fees are, you know, a high margin, very profitable revenue source for all kinds of companies, from banks to your internet provider to government agencies and everything in between. So as a consumer, this, once again, this is going to be I'm going to sound like a broken record today, but it goes back to the fundamentals, which is you can't do anything about a fee that you don't know about. So step number one is really staying on top of your transactions and monitoring them closely.
Welcome, welcome back to the show. I am so glad to have you here. Since we're friends, I'm just going to shoot it straight to you. There are a lot of sneaky fees in bank accounts and credit cards and honestly a lot of other places. Basically, I feel anywhere a sneaky fee can be, it's going to be because that's the way that a lot of banks and institutions make a lot of extra money. And one of the primary reasons I'm a big advocate for you being in your money every week is just this chance to spot these fees, because many of them you can avoid paying or spot them and get rid of them. But I know the whole point is there shouldn't be those fees to begin with. But that savings, while it might only be a few dollars here and there, can actually radically change how fast you hit your money goals. Just some food for thought. Our guest on this show, Paul, he is the founder of a company called Cushion. And Paul absolutely loves working on products and personal hacks that help you save time or money. And Cushion is this amazing app that does a lot of this heavy lifting for you to spot these sneaky fees. So we're going to talk about the top five sneaky bank and credit card fees you need to know, what to do about them, and how they can transform your finances. I'm so excited to bring you this episode. All right, let's get to the episode. Paul, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I am so excited to chat with you today.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
This is going to be a great discussion because saving money on fees is something that I hear from listeners all the time. So I love that we get to have this talk. And I know that this idea of financial freedom, this is something that so many people want. It takes time. It takes patience, but it also takes knowing what to do in order to get there. So I'd like to just maybe start there. Like, what are some money secrets that we need to know about the know-how to get us to that financial freedom piece?
Sure. So the know-how piece, in my opinion, comes down to two things. One is getting good at the basics, and the other is resisting FOMO. And so a lot of people, you know, they want a shortcut to making money quickly. And once in a while, someone gets lucky investing in some hot cryptocurrency of the day. But those are the very rare exceptions. But and people start to see that and think to themselves, what about me? I don't want to miss out, et cetera. And the proof is that investment platforms like Robinhood and Coinbase had record growth during the pandemic because people were trying to turn their stimulus checks into 20x that money. But that's just not how life works, right? And that's actually the quickest way for most folks to lose money. So being good at money is trying to resist the temptations and mastering the boring stuff, monitoring your finances, setting budgets, paying yourself first, and all that stuff we hear time and time again.
It's so true, the boring stuff that is the foundational stuff. And I can't tell you just what you were talking about. I can't tell you how many of my friends have said, oh my gosh, if I would have invested at the beginning of the year and X, Y, and Z, like think how much money I would have and should I do it now? And what should I do? And there's like this heightened level, I think, of FOMO right now, of people really feeling like either they missed out on something or they should get into something. But you're right. Like it's really about going back to those basics that seem a little bit boring, but time and time again, I'm sure you've seen this. This is how people end up building wealth. And saving money is always on the top of people's lists. I hear it from listeners all the time. They constantly write in questions about how do I save more money? Like, is there a trick to saving more money? Why can't I save more money? I hear this all the time. Why do you think it's so hard to save money? Like, what are we doing wrong that is causing us to get in this place where we just can't seem to save?
Yeah, I think saving money is on the top of everyone's list until they have some, and then the temptations to come creeping in. But it's hard to give generalized answers to why it's hard to save money since everyone's situation is different, right? So if I were to break it down into two groups of people who find it hard to save, I'd say that group number one can't save money and group number two won't save money. Mm. And so what I mean by that is group number one is making less than they need to survive or just enough to get by. And so they're just unable to set aside additional cash. And that's not due to their own fault, right? This is just life is tough. And unfortunately, that's a huge chunk of the population. But group number two consists of folks who make more money than they need to get by and should have no issue building up their savings. Unfortunately, you know, we live in an era of instant gratification. People want the experiences and lifestyles they see on Instagram, and they want that today. whether or not their finances allow for it at the moment.
Yeah, I've definitely fallen prey to that many times. Every time a new phone comes out or some device, I'm like, I don't even know why I need to have it, but somehow I feel like I need to have it. And before I know it, I'm hitting the button to spend more money. And it really takes like a conscious moment to kind of step back. And one of the things that I know really gets in the way of saving money is fees again. And you have this really cool story of why you started Cushion. You said you had discovered like $400 in fees on accounts and was trying to figure out like, wait a minute, where did this come from? And how do I get rid of these? So how can we figure out, before I get to your story, I'd love to just know, like, how can we figure out what fees we're actually paying?
Yeah, so unfortunately, fees are, you know, a high margin, very profitable revenue source for all kinds of companies, from banks to your internet provider to government agencies and everything in between. So as a consumer, I'm going to sound like a broken record today, but it goes back to the fundamentals, which is you can't do anything about a fee that you don't know about. So step number one is really staying on top of your transactions and monitoring them closely. And you can do that yourself, or you can use any of the many fintech apps out there that find these fees that you're paying for you and notify you about them. And at Cushion, our specialty at the moment is finding these sneaky bank and credit card fees, which we do very, very well.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about like the most typical fees that you find that people are paying that maybe they don't even know they're paying.
So I think those are two different questions. The most popular fees by far are overdrafts. And that just became a bigger issue during the pandemic. Folks were scrambling to get by. They had bills due. They needed to feed their families. And so they were overdrafting their accounts just to literally keep the lights on. And so in terms of just dollar amount, the overdraft fees are the most problematic. When I think about the top like five categories in terms of volume, there's ATM fees, overdraft fees, monthly service charges, which is just such a silly way to penalize people. Just because your balance is low, you get hit with a fee.
Yeah.
Credit card late fees and credit card interest charges. And collectively, these are just billions of dollars pretty much hemorrhaging out of people's bank accounts each year. It's very sad.
Yeah, it's a lot of money when you think about it that way. So how did you go from this point of realizing these fees were there to I need to start a company about this? Like, how did you make that transition?
Yeah, the transition was less so about bank fees specifically. This just happens to be our first product. The way I made this transition was I was very disappointed in a lot of the apps that were in the market that are supposed to help the consumer that felt like what they were doing is very surface level, but the meat of the work, which is in this case, negotiating the fees, was left on me as a consumer to do. And people are busy and they're tired and they don't want to deal with the confrontation. And so this opened up kind of an investigation into the consumer finance space. And it became clear that people need help across many different aspects of their financial lives. But we started with bank fees specifically because nobody had built an automated solution to negotiate them before. So we thought to ourselves, multi-billion dollar market, massive pain point for consumers, and there's no solution out there. So we should do something about it.
Yeah, I just think it's sort of mind-blowing. I have, I'm what I call a recovering certified financial planner, no longer practicing. But when I worked with clients, we would look at everything, of course. And we would always look at their bank accounts. And I mean, I can't tell you how many times I would say, do you know you're paying like $25 a month or whatever it might be just to have this bank account? And there's just like a blank look on people's faces like, what? I'm paying what? And then when you do the math, like $25 times 12 months times however many years, I mean, that's some real money. And that's just one category of fee. But I think most of us just end up paying for things like you're saying. And I mean, wouldn't you agree? Like, we just don't even know that this is happening.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is people are living their lives day to day, rightfully so. You wake up, you go to work or commute to your couch, I guess, nowadays. And one of the biggest value adds that we provide at Cushion, everyone thinks, oh, they do fee negotiation. We've refunded people a lot of money. Sure. But before that, we actually just monitor your accounts and let you know if fees we've detected. And most people are shocked the moment they hit our dashboard because it shows you how much you spent on fees in the last year or two. And more often than not, that's over $1,000 between credit card annual membership fees, a couple of overdrafts, some ATM fees here and there. It adds up very quickly. So that's what we're most proud of, is the awareness piece of, hey, this is a problem. You have a leaky bucket. It's time to start making some changes here and stop wasting your hard-earned money.
Yeah, we're getting into thousands of dollars. That's some serious money. And you talked about this idea of negotiation. I talk about it a lot on this show because I have successfully negotiated many things, even things that maybe you think you couldn't negotiate. So what are some examples of bills, like if somebody wanted to try this on their own, that they could think about negotiating? Is there things that we can negotiate and things that we can't?
So just a quick background on myself here. I'm Lebanese, so we negotiate everything all the time, whether it's cucumbers or an apartment, it doesn't really matter. That's just in our DNA. But I do truly believe that whether it's fees or bills, everything is negotiable. But you have to be okay with the fact that some negotiations will be fruitful and others won't. So at Cushion, we specialize in bank fee negotiation, and we've successfully put over $10 million back in the pockets of our customers in the last year. And the way we do that is, our machine learning understands the value each customer brings to the bank and uses that to get some money back. And that same principle really applies to most bills you pay on a day-to-day basis. Your internet, your phone, your auto insurance, and even your rent. Most billers, most companies that you owe money to do not want to lose your business. They do not want to go to collections and get pennies on the dollar. So if you reinforce your value to them, ask them firmly, but you know, politely, you'd be surprised by how open a lot of these companies are to giving you some money back.
Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress toward your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money Under Podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters, and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. It's Tuesday, and we've got another Ask Shauna. And this one comes from Brandon. And Brandon says, "Hey, Shauna, I'm a fan of the show, and I've been listening from way back in 2016. And I admit I have wanted to ask a question for a long time now, but I've been a bit shy," which is crazy because there are like a million Brandons out there anyway. So who would know that it's actually me? But the point is, I'm here now and I'm asking the question. I'm trying to figure out something. So I got a job offer from a new company and they're willing to pay me about 20% more than my other job. Not great, but it's okay. The problem is that their benefits are terrible as far as health insurance and they don't even offer a match on their 401k. My current company offers a nice 50% match up to 6%, so I've been able to stash away some really good money. I really like the new job offer, I mean the company, but does it make sense to walk away from good benefits just for a 20% pay increase? I know there are so many variables to this answer, but just curious what your gut reaction might be. Brandon, I'm so glad that you decided to ask the question. See, it's not that tough, right? Congrats on the new job. And you're right, this kind of is a tough question. I'm going to give you my gut reaction, my two cents, a couple of things to think about that will hopefully point you in the right direction. The first thing is, have you talked to the HR department at the new job to see really exactly what their entire benefit package would be like? Maybe they might offer some other good benefits that might make it enticing that you just aren't aware of at the time. And I know that sounds like an obvious thing, but sometimes I think when we get offered a new job, we think that we can't ask, "Hey, can we see the benefits package? Can we talk to someone in HR?" And that can't be further from the truth. Those things are all possible and they should be available to you. I think another thing to think about is, I'm thinking about this 20% salary increase. Are there any chances you could negotiate for potentially a higher salary? I'm not sure where you are in the process, but I really try to resell your skills to this new company and let them know that you really want this job, but you'd also be walking away from super good benefits to do so. And would they consider a 30 to 40% increase to make it work, to entice you to come over, whatever that language is for you that you feel comfortable? Have you gone back to them and seen if you can bump that 20% up just a little bit more, where maybe it might make a little bit more sense for you? And I always go back to this idea, this really old school idea of a pros and cons list, but I make pros and cons lists for all the big decisions in my life because there's something really powerful about looking at it on paper. So write down all the pros and cons of the old company versus the new company and see it actually in print in front of you. Then what I do is a trick I call the 1-2-3 trick. So I put a 1, a 2, or a 3 next to each thing in terms of, number 1, it matters to me a lot. Number 2, I'm so-so about it, no big deal. And number 3, I really don't like this thing. And once I've done that, then I go back and I look at my numbers, and usually that gives me a pretty good indication of what my decision should be. Now, just because you get that out on paper doesn't mean that has to be your decision, but at least you have the information. At least you know how you feel about it. And so you know that when you're making the decision, you're coming to it from a place of some sort of thought, right? You've really thought this one out versus just jumping at the new offer because of the 20% increase. I think actually your question is really smart because you're pausing and you're saying, does this actually make sense? Another thing is, of course, you could still contribute if the new company has a 401k, even if they don't have the match. And maybe you explore opening up a Roth IRA if you're within the income guidelines, or a traditional IRA, and stash away some more money if you have that available to you in the meantime. And who knows, maybe that company might change their policy going forward. I mean, I've seen companies who had matching programs in place for years, and then all of a sudden they took away the match. So I'm not saying that they'll suddenly magically add a match in, but I think what I'm trying to get you to think about is, how important is that to you versus, like you say, you really want to work at this new job? Is there a way to get the salary a little bit higher? Lots of different scenarios here, but this isn't a perfect science, but maybe you can get the new company up just a little bit higher to at least make that move make more sense financially. But this is such a great question. And Brandon, I can tell that you are really like dialed in because you're asking the right questions. You're thinking about this. You're trying to think through everything without just jumping on the first offer. So hope that gave you just a little bit of guidance. If you're like Brandon and you're sitting there and you have a question that you want to ask, what are you waiting for? I don't even have to say your name if you tell me not to. I've done plenty of anonymous questions. So you can head over to the link in the show notes to ask your question, or head over to the podcast hub, mmoneypodcast.com. And right on the homepage, on the bottom of the homepage, there's an Ask Shauna section. Fill it out, because I cannot wait to answer your question. Don't go anywhere. We have got so much more to cover about negotiating these sneaky fees. Let's jump back into it. And are there things that we should say or not say when we're negotiating? Obviously, we want to try to be as nice as possible, but is there specific words that we're using or not using?
So when it comes to negotiation of anything, not just fees, the same principles apply. And I'll just kind of share the framework that I think of when I'm dealing with this stuff. So one is, you have to do your homework and figure out what other options you have. So if you're living somewhere where there's one internet provider or a place to like get your electricity, there's not much wiggle room there. You need those folks, but that's very rare nowadays. There's a lot of competition in the market. So first of all, figure out what your leverage is, what the competitive landscape looks like. And it's your subtle way of almost telling whoever you're negotiating with, like, I have options. And then also have something ready to say. You don't want to just freeform, just show up and hope that what comes out of your mouth is going to be smart and compelling. Doing a little bit of prep helps. Having just basic information ready, like your account number, how much you've been paying the biller, how long you've been with them, All of this is important. Reinforcing your value and loyalty, reminding the support agent that like how many payments you've made on time, if that's something that applies. If you have any financial hardships, you should definitely mention those, because most companies, whether it's PG&E, Comcast, et cetera, they all have programs to help people who have financial hardships. So you just need to surface that information. As you said, be firm, but also polite. Like the human being on the other end of the line did not invent the rules. So the nicer you are to them, the more likely are they to help you. And lastly, just don't give up so easily. So if one agent says no, that's fine. Wait a day or two and try again. But when it comes to what not to say, it's pretty simple. Just keep calm and don't curse or shout at the other person at the end of the line. Kind of losing your cool and being aggressive won't get you anywhere at all. In fact, it might result in you losing access to the service or having negative comments sent to your credit bureau, which could affect your credit score.
Oh.
So in short, do your homework, be prepared, be cool, and don't give up after the first rejection.
Right. And I love also, it starts with asking a question. Most of us don't even ask the question to negotiate. So, and asking the question, we've got a 50-50 shot in this as well. And then with those tips, we can probably increase our odds. And you brought up credit score, and I'm wondering if we've maybe had some negative things in our financial past. Maybe we haven't paid some bills on time, or maybe our credit score isn't as great as we would like it to be. Do those things put us at a disadvantage when it comes to negotiating fees?
Yeah, your history with the bank, the credit card issuer, whoever it is, does definitely impact the outcome of your negotiations, like when you're trying to get some money back. And so if the bank, for example, is forgiving with you once or twice or three times, that will decrease over time. And by the way, each bank has a different policy and they're cyclical. Sure. They'll say within 1 year, we'll give you back X amount and so on and so forth. And so it's important to just stay on top of these things. If you get hit with a fee, the faster you act on it, the better. So for example, late fees do affect your credit score. So if you have a credit card bill due, even if you can't afford it, try to pay the bare minimum, even if it's like $25 on time. Because the second that late fee hits, that can be reported to the credit bureau, which will impact your credit score, which can increase your interest rates if you're applying for another loan. So it's kind of like a domino effect that can go downhill really, really quickly. So I would definitely say try to negotiate these fees. So the right order is try to pay the bare minimum and not get hit with the late fee. But if you do, negotiate it as fast as possible before your credit card issuer has a chance to send it to the bureau. And by the way, we've seen a 50% success rate reversing credit card late fees. Wow. So it's funny when you said 50-50, you actually nailed it on that one. And if for any reason you're a bit late on negotiating the late fee and it has been already reported to the credit bureau, you can still contact them and try to get that taken care of. It's just a bit more work.
Right. Yeah, I like that. That's a great sort of action plan, because it is sometimes easy to forget to pay a bill. Most of us probably have things on auto pay, but it still can come up where something you just forget to pay. And then you get in that moment of panic where you realize you haven't paid it. And this is just a great step in, okay, here's what you need to do to try and get that reversed. And obviously we can do a lot of these things we can try and do on our own. But what I love about Cushion, it's really something I haven't seen out there, is that you do the heavy lifting for us, which is fantastic, because I think a lot of people have this aversion to even the word negotiation. There's just this, you picture some like slimy sales guy. And that's not really what's happening. But with Cushion, you can help us at least get to a place. So tell me a little bit more about like how it works. I get that you're also staying on top of our bills and like looking for any of these fees. But if you spot something where there's an extra fee, like what is that process like to maybe get that fee reversed or removed?
Sure. So first, let me just cover what we do and then kind of how we do it. So our goal long-term is to put financial peace of mind on autopilot for consumers. Because as you mentioned, people are busy. They have other things to deal with. They don't want to have a confrontation or build predictive models. That's not what people have to do. They have lives to live. So our debut product right now is focused on bank and credit card fees. And what we do can be broken down to three chunks. One is we find and notify customers of any bank fees or credit card fees that they've paid. So that's the awareness piece. Two is that we have this negotiation engine that will contact the customer's financial institution automatically to get those fees waived or refunded. And so as I mentioned, we've refunded over 10 million bucks in the last year alone. And our most recent feature will predict and alert folks that their risk of overdrafting their account or getting hit with some type of fee. So at the moment, we're focusing on finding, negotiating, and very soon predicting these fees for consumers.
Wow.
And the process of negotiating is far more complicated than it sounds, but just to simplify it, one is finding these fees is so much more complicated and tedious than it sounds, just because you think of the word overdraft or maybe non-sufficient funds, but something like CP item is actually an overdraft. It's a cousin of an overdraft. It's a courtesy pay fee, and a credit union somewhere, you know, in Nebraska might call their overdraft CP item. And so you might see that. Yeah, it's very sneaky. So we have a very intense detection layer that finds these fees all built on machine learning. Then we have a bunch of machine learning models to figure out what's negotiable, when to reach out to the bank, what to say to the bank. And then we have our systems that will reach out to the banks via traditional mail, secure email exchanges, and so on. And then other models that will read these emails programmatically. And it's taken us years and years to build the infrastructure, the data, and the models to do this so that you can just sign up and then get on with your life, and Cushion takes care of the rest behind the scenes.
So are banks and credit card companies, are they trying themselves to find ways around the technology that you're building? I mean, is there a like tug of war happening, or are they just like, okay, fine?
So it's not a tug of war. At the same time, banks are not going to welcome this with open arms, just because, like I mentioned earlier, fees are a wonderful high margin revenue source for a lot of companies and banks specifically. With that being said, banks are also, traditional banks are battling it out with neobanks that are low fee, no fee by design. Right. So even though they might not love that our technology is doing the work for the consumer, we're actually helping them retain a lot of these customers. Because we'll ask somebody, hey, how do you feel about bank X? Like, oh, I hate them. I can't believe how much they've charged me. And then we'll get them back a few hundred dollars. And we ask them again. They're like, you know what? They're not so bad. Maybe I should stick with them. So we are in a roundabout way helping their retention of their customers.
Yeah, I guess that is a good way to look at it, right? Yeah. I mean, everybody loves money back. So suddenly you give someone money back, it's like, oh, yeah, I love the company. They're fantastic.
Yep. Correct.
And fintech, I mean, in particular, I mean, even if we just look back the last like 5 years, how things have changed, how we can do money differently in so many different ways than we weren't able to do before. It really is, it's really inspiring. And I'm curious your thought, because you're in this all day long. What do you think the future is for fintech, and like how it's going to be able to help us as customers and help us do money better and maybe hopefully grow wealth?
Yeah, it's really, really difficult to predict the future of fintech and money for that matter, because everything's evolving so quickly. And yes, there are more options out there than ever, but that also means there's more noise as well. So the intense competition in the consumer finance and banking space is resulting in more innovation, better app experiences, new products to help people manage their money. But it's still on the consumer to vet these services and use the handful that are actually right for them. So unfortunately, like the most amazing apps and products can wreak havoc if they're used by the wrong people. And the example I go back to is investing. It's easier than ever to just start investing with just a few dollars. But if you don't have a savings account, if you don't have a nest egg, and then you start taking money and automatically investing it into something that will hopefully be the next, you know, breakaway cryptocurrency, that's just not responsible. So no matter what innovation comes out, the consumer needs to stop and say, all right, what problem is this app or product going to solve in my life? Is this right for me? If this goes sideways, how much do I risk to lose before, you know, just jumping in and getting excited? So a lot of this has to go back to folks like you and I, and really vetting these apps before we start connecting all of our financial institutions to them.
That makes sense. Yeah. So because you're in this world all day long, I mean, has this changed how you think and deal with your own money?
I have, once again, so for me, coming from country like Lebanon, that is very volatile, and we expect things to fall apart at any moment. I have a lot of the foundational stuff ingrained in my head, because where I grew up, it's you expect everything to fall apart, and you could lose everything in an instant. So if you just grow up with that mindset, very careful, you put money aside. So when something like the pandemic hits, you're kind of ready for it. So not a whole lot has changed on my end. Still a broke founder trying to help consumers save money.
I feel your pain, Paul. I understand. Well, this has been so insightful. I love to end every episode with an actionable money tip, idea, strategy, tool, something that we need to know about. So what's something that you want the Millennial Money listeners to walk away with after our conversation?
So I mentioned earlier that this whole situation with Instagram and instant gratification and people just wanting to live that champagne lifestyle today. But the main thing that I go back to is making money is hard, but holding on to money is a lot harder. And when you log into your bank account and start to see some money coming in, all kinds of temptations will creep up. And before you know it, you spent a bunch of that money. So my philosophy here is not rocket science at all. It's out of sight, out of mind. So I send a small percentage of each paycheck that I earn into a savings account at a different bank that I rarely log into. And so when I'm logging into my primary bank, I see my checking account. That's where I'm paying my rent, paying my bills, and forgetting that the other money exists. And this strategy is very boring, as I mentioned before, but it's incredibly effective because you passively build up a savings account. And it doesn't feel like, oh, I'm depriving myself. It's just automatically getting routed there the second you get paid.
So after this episode, I did a little investigation myself and found over $100 in silly fees that I actually never saw before. And this is shocking because I'm in my money all the time. So I'm just saying an app that does this for you is pretty cool in my book. If you want to learn more about Cushion, head over to their website, cushion.ai, and you can find out all the information you need to know and get signed up if this is something you're interested in. But at the very least, let this just be a little warning to check out your bank accounts, check out your credit cards, and look for these sneaky fees. So thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, do me a favor, share it with friends and family members. Anybody who you know might need to know about these sneaky fees as well. As always, you can find links to our show guest as well as our episode sponsors right in the show notes. I'll see you back here in a few days for a brand new episode.
Hey, you. Yes, you. Before you go, we want to say thanks for listening to this episode of Millennial Money. For all the links, tags, and ads you've heard on today's episode, check out the show notes or go to mmoneypodcast.com. Well, you'll find more episodes to share with your friends. While you're at it, leave us a review and make sure to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss out on all the money tips and tricks that will take you from a millennial regular to a millennial money expert. See you back here in a few days with a fresh new episode.